You're listening to WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd. This coming Monday is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, on which we celebrate Dr. King as a great public intellectual, a great orator, and of course, a great civil rights leader. But his skills as a political and media strategist don't often make the list. Alexis Madrigal wrote about this aspect of Dr. King's genius for The Atlantic, and he joins me now to talk about it. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The civil rights movement of the 1960s happened at the same time that television news was beginning to come into its own as a medium. And you've called King a master television producer. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, Dr. King understood that for the great systemic inequalities in American society, you needed drama. You needed a sense of suspense. And though he was rarely open about the way that he was creating media events, his lieutenants and other people have gone on to describe that they knew exactly what they were doing in terms of creating geographically constrained arc-style narratives that could have villains, heroes, and all the other things that make for great drama.
One early event that helped shape Dr. King's thinking about media strategy was the Albany movement in 1961. That's Albany, Georgia. It was a desegregation movement and a voters' rights coalition. It's generally seen as less successful than later events, even as a failure. But how did it help shape King's strategic thinking?
You look at the ones that were very successful. They have this like clear imagery that can be shown. The things didn't go on for months and months, you know, like Little Rock Central High School. The children are going to walk in
right
through these crowds of angry white people.
Right.
These children who've been trained, who know what they're doing. And that moral drama, that picture that you see there, is going to be worth as much as a lot of policy considerations that were going in to do desegregation.
Now, after Albany, Dr. King goes to Birmingham, and that's where his strategies, as we think of them, really start to take shape, in particular, the ways in which he begins to put children front and center in the movement, as you've been saying. Here's a clip of him speaking about how best to respond to the Birmingham schools expelling or suspending more than 1,000 students who participated in civil rights marches there.
We don't want to do anything that will cause Mr. Bull Connor to sit down in majestic delight because we made a mistaken move. So we are not having the mass walkout tomorrow, and we are not calling for a renewal of demonstrations.
That tape comes to us courtesy of the Riverside Church Archives. And Bull Connor, of course, was the now infamous Commissioner of Public Safety in Birmingham. What was the significance of children's participation in terms of Dr. King's media strategy?
Well, this is part of the role that television plays. This is part of how America ends up, you know, white America ends up interpreting the civil rights movement. Who could be more deserving than children trying to get an education? And I think that's really what it goes to as kind of a media strategy tactic. It's just like children are characters that you can say, well, what have they done? You know, the kids are often a way to flip that switch and have people see the situation anew.
And nothing more horrific than to see fire hoses and German Shepherd dogs turned on children.
That's right. I mean, I think it's so clear that picture of injustice couldn't be more clear.
Has the narrative around the ways in which the press and particular television broadcast media came to the story of civil rights perhaps left us a bit complacent about everything that's happened since?
I think that the narrative that got built up was just that good-hearted journalists from the North went to the South and they saw this injustice. And as soon as they exposed it to the country, everyone was transformed. If you look at America today in January 2020, one thing you see is that you can be as racist as you want as long as you're sufficiently subtle about it, it doesn't blow up in your face. And that's why we have so much systemic inequality in this country. And yet people are not galvanized to action. People know that the racial wealth gap has been widening for basically my entire life, and I'm 37 years old. And if that's the case and people aren't up in arms, then what does it really say about us as a country and what kind of good it does to merely expose people to information without the drama around it?
Alexis Madrigal is a staff writer for The Atlantic and the author of the recent piece, When the Revolution Was Televised. He joined us from Berkeley. Alexis, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
And on Monday, we continue the conversation about Dr. King's tactics with excerpts from WNYC's annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at the Apollo. Tune in for the special The Strategic King, Monday at noon on 93.9 FM and AM 820.